This is Creating Windows, Not Bars, a monthly show on Justice Radio on WMPG with your host, Linda Small. So as your host, I'm a project coordinator with Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and executive director of Rantry Sisters, an organization that helps women and girls return home from prison. You can learn more about us on our website at reentrysisters.org. Today, we're talking with Kevin Bott, the founder and artistic director of Ritual for Return, a homecoming rites of passage for transition from incarceration to freedom. And two of the recent graduates of the program, Baina Shoemake and Diana Scarlett. And today, we're talking about the power of ritual to help people return and process their trauma of incarceration, reduce stigma, and reunite with their families. And so thank you all for joining us today. So hi, Kevin, welcome, and thanks so much for taking your time out today to be with us. So can you tell us about your background and what brought you to the work of Ritual for Return?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us. I know I speak for Tiana and Baina to say we really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this work. My background is actually for the first probably 30 years of my life, simply being a musical theater actor and director. I was, you know, trying to do the whole actor thing, waiting tables in New York City, trying to figure out, you know, what I was doing with myself. And when I was in my early 30s, I went back to graduate school at NYU in a theater education program. And one of the focus areas was called Campus and Communities. And there was a program going into medium and maximum security prisons in New York State. And I began volunteering for an organization called Rehabilitation Through the Arts, which some people may know now because folks that were involved in that program wrote the movie Sing Sing, which is out now. And so I was volunteering in Sing Sing in about seven different medium and max security prisons. And then I was employed as the first director of education for that program. And the turning point for me was, well, over a number of years, kind of asking myself, okay, I know this is impactful for the individuals participating in theater programs in prison, but is it changing the system? And in fact, I worried that it was actually being used by prison administrators to kind of celebrate themselves for the progressive programming they were having and actually preventing us from making more progress against the cruel and inhumane context that incarceration is. And one day during a rehearsal, one of the actors had just made the parole board and he was preparing to go home to New York City. And he just asked me, you know, this has changed my life. And what is there back in the city that I can do to continue being involved in theater? And that question led me to think about reentry for the first time. I had just never thought about that side of mass incarceration. And I went to the NYU library, and the very first book that I pulled off the shelf was a book called But They All Come Back by criminologist Jeremy Travis. And I know very specifically in chapter 10, he begins to talk about the community context of reentry and was discussing elevation ceremonies and reentry courts and just an idea that ritual could have a powerful role to play in welcoming people home and in helping people overcome not just the practical difficulties of coming home, housing, addiction, employment, education, family repair. But as I got deeper into the literature, the question that kept resurfacing was, what about the trauma? What about the feelings of shame? What about the feeling of carrying around a stigma, no matter what accomplishments you achieve in your life? And so I wound up discovering like 75 years of anthropological, criminological, sociological literature that all pointed to this idea of rites of passage as being a potential tool for reentry. And the reason is because rites of passage are a particular kind of ritual whose function is to facilitate change and to, in, you know, it's one of the oldest human tools that we have, and it's found across the globe. No particular culture can claim it. Somehow innate to being a human being is this idea of needing a container to take us across thresholds from one state of being to another state of being. And that was very powerful to me, because I knew that when you go into prison, you have an identity change. The state proclaims in one way or another, and people experience the idea of going from citizen to something else, whether it's outcast, felon, or just a number. But you are known to the wider culture to be something other than what you were. But when you come out, there is nothing to reverse the effects of that labeling process. And so many times we think of the return as needing a delabeling process or a re-elevation back into the status of citizen. And so when I read all of that as a theater maker, you know, I was reading about changing the narrative, the power of reframing one's narrative, and also this idea of ritual. And I thought, well, as a theater maker, I know this is our work. And that began the process of trying to think about how do we devise a homecoming rite of passage that can help to deal with the shame and stigma and trauma of incarceration.
That's beautiful, Kevin. Thank you for sharing. You made so many important points there. I think one of them, when you're talking about reframing the narrative, how critical that is. And for a lot of people doing this type of work, they are trying to walk that balance between reform and abolition and not legitimizing the system, right? We still need to care for our loved ones who are currently incarcerated and their families. And how do we do that without giving undue credit, right? The credit goes to the women and the men actually doing the hard and challenging work of surviving incarceration and then somehow rebuilding their lives afterwards. And I think the idea of ritual is a beautiful thing. And I talk a lot about sisterhood in Reentry Sisters, same idea, it's sort of this club, it's this support network, it's this container to do that vital work of coming home. So I love that, thank you. And so, Naina, we'd love to have our audience hear from you. So welcome. Thanks so much for being here today. So can you please tell our listeners a little bit about you?
Well, I attend this group called Returning Citizens. And through participating in that group, it's a support group for anybody who has experienced any level of incarceration. And I was blessed to meet Kevin there. And through coming there and meeting Kevin there, I got to see the men perform first. And so I knew I wanted to be a part of Ritual Return when he did it for the women. I too am a returning citizen. I too was incarcerated. And I now know through, you know, trying to rebuild my life that label and that stigma is always attached to you in some form or some kind of way. You know, even years after my incarceration and me trying to rebuild and repair and put my life back together, somehow, some way, it comes up all the time. It knocks you down with employment. It knocks you down with housing and so many other areas in your life. You never really fully get a chance to remove that label from yourself, but through participating with Ritual for a Return, internally, it gives you some healing, you know, internally for yourself. Maybe the world may not remove that label from you, but through going through Ritual Return, you can remove that label from yourself. So that was a blessing.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. And so, Tiana, please share with our audience who you are. And thank you so much. We appreciate you joining us today. And we want to hear from you.
Well, hello, everybody. I don't want to repeat exactly what Mayina said about how we met Kevin, but I will say my story is a tad bit different. I actually was at, so I'm also a part of NJSTEP, which is the pipeline from prison to college. And I had the opportunity while being incarcerated to become a student through NJSTEP, where I had the opportunity to graduate from Red to Valley and then from Rutgers University. And now I'm a grad student. Also, I graduated this past May.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I happened to meet Kevin at one of our annual meetings this past January. And honestly, to be truthful, when I agreed to do Rituals for Return, it was me feeling like I needed to be able to give back, but I had no idea what I was giving back for, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to agree to something that I had no knowledge of, it was just because in my heart, I knew that one, it was recommended by my now my fellow colleagues that I should give the program a try. But at that time, I just trusted them enough to know that they wouldn't tell me to participate into something that was harmful, right?
Mm.
So once I started going into the groups, I was terrified, I'm gonna be honest, because the truth is, when you're dealing with invisible stigma and you have shame that has built over the years, to begin unpacking it is terrifying. And I didn't even know if I was going to be able to complete it because I literally was terrified of what my truth looked like for me. I will say, because I know we're going to get into it, so I won't speak so deeply into it, but what I will say is I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I've had through this program, through this ritual, right? Because it gave me the opportunity to truly start working on my healing process. And mm-hmm. for years, I thought that I worked on myself, but the truth is, when you can't look in a mirror and be honest about the things that terrifies you, you still have levels of healing and cleansing to do. And Rituals for Return mm-hmm. gave me the opportunity to literally start the groundwork. And I'm grateful for that today.
Thank you, Tayana. I can so relate to that terrifying aspect of uncovering and unpacking, because you're not sure what you're going to discover. What if I discover nothing? That's a void. That can be a very frightening process. So thank you both. You are listening to Justice Radio with your host, Linda Small. Today we're talking to Kevin, Baina, and Tayana about this extraordinary rite of passage, Ritual for Return. Kevin, can you give a nice outline for our listeners? What is Ritual for Return? What do people actually do? What does that program look like?
The heart of the story, and one thing I didn't mention that Jeremy Travis book pointed me toward, is another scholar I just want the listeners to know about named Shad Maruna. He is an Irish scholar who, interestingly, because our headquarters now is in Newark, New Jersey, used to be the head of the criminology department at Rutgers Newark before he went back to Ireland. But he did a long-term study of over 900 returning citizens in the UK. And one of his major takeaways in his research was that what helped people to, now he was looking at desistance from criminal activity, which is something different than what I'm doing, because I think, there are many reasons for desistance. And there are many reasons that people participate in criminal activity. And I don't think that has anything to do with whether, people are changed or transformed. I think there's a lot of context that leads to criminal activity. But what he did discover was that one powerful aspect of someone changing their own sense of themselves after incarceration was the ability, what he calls re-biograph, to, and what he means by that is to reframe their own narrative in such a way that instead of their actions and their incarceration being thought of as just the worst thing that has ever happened to them and something that is irredeemable, being able to reframe their life experiences in a way that gives them meaning and purpose, so that they become what many of us know the term wounded healers, that we've gone through a wounding, and because of healing from that wounding, we have the ability to heal others and to support others. And so narrative was a big part of Ritual for Return in my thinking about it. And I say all of that to say that the heart of Ritual for Return is surfacing the stories of the participants and giving the participants a chance to tell their stories. And in telling the stories, you know, both to notice sort of what are the parts of the stories that they, like we all do, tell on autopilot, that we don't even think about aspects of our story because it's so ingrained in who we think ourselves to be. But in writing those down and in saying them out loud, the participants have a chance to really hear the way that they're telling their stories about themselves and discover new aspects of those stories and maybe think of the stories in ways they hadn't thought of before. Mm-hmm. So what we do is over the course of a semester, and I say semester because one, I developed this in graduate school. So I was in that mindset of, you know, this is a class that's going to take place over the course of a semester, but really it's 3 months, 12 to 14 weeks, depending on how, you know, how Thanksgiving lands or some other holiday. 12 to 14 weeks, we get together one night a week, 3 hours a night. And I really think of it as a theatrical devising process. We are taking raw materials from people's stories, collective stories of what their lives were like before incarceration. Maybe a lot of times, of course, the trauma that people endured that led to decisions and actions and being in situations that led to incarceration. The collective story of incarceration, because as individual as it is for any one person, we all know there's a lot of sameness for people who are in the system. And then the collective story of what it means to come out and the difficulties of reintegrating into communities and families and the wider society, but also the individual autobiographical narrative. And so we work on that 3 hours a night. Now, I'll say there's a lot of flexibility involved because for these women, Tayana and Bayina and their cohort, we had all sorts of scheduling challenges because, of course, people have different work schedules and different life needs that pop up and children and elders that they care for. And so we were working together, but a lot of Zoom, a lot of one-on-one time. We weren't doing as much of the collective work as we normally do. But the foundational model is one in which we come together, we do theater exercises, we use our bodies, we ground ourselves, we do some mindfulness work. We do a lot of drumming with djembe drums, which everyone loves to do. Sometimes we're doing singing or chanting. We're doing tongue twisters to, you know, be able to stand on stage and speak with articulation and power and presence. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the work, especially about 5 or 6 weeks in, is the women in this case share their stories with me. And I've done, you know, my work in those first several weeks is to build trust with them, to let them know I'm going to honor what they tell me and that their stories are safe in my hands. And then I sit and I listen to stories. And sometimes those stories go on for a half hour, an hour or longer, because I'm really saying, tell me from the earliest thing you can remember until us sitting here right now. I want to hear everything. And then from that, we start having a back and forth exchange to find what can be, you know, I say to them, we have the facts. We all have facts. There's a million details in the facts. But within those facts is the truth. And that's what art is about, is how do we find the truth out of all those details? And so that's what we're looking for. And I'll let Ty and Bay talk about, you know, what they discovered in that writing process and in writing their stories. But essentially, we don't want to, there is some aspect to it, even though it is truly a ritual in the way that a wedding is a ritual, but also in the way that a wedding is kind of a performance. It's kind of a staged moment with lines that people have to say and particular things that people wear and an audience who's bearing witness and people with their different roles. Same with ritual for return. So there is an aspect where, you know, we want to hold people's attention. So we're not just going to get up and talk for a half hour, one after the other, of all the details. We're going to make something that gets at the heart of the story and surfaces the really important themes. And what I try to say is, you know, this is a process of going from a story owning you and having power over you to you owning your story and you having the power to shape your narrative the way you want people to hear your narrative. And I know particularly in Ty's case, sometimes in Ritual for Return, that story is being told for literally the very first time on stage in front of an audience of 150 people. And so that's what it is. It's this 12 to 14 week process, 3 hours a week. And we build up to having a public enactment of this ritual and invite family and loved ones and community supporters to gather. And we say, you're not an audience at a play. This is not a play. You are here to bear witness to the stories of these women and to bear witness now to the commitments, the vows that they've prepared to make as they now re-enter the community with the identity that they want you to see and that they want you to experience. And again, I won't speak for the women, but I think from what I understand from them and from the audience that it is a very powerful and life-changing in many ways experience for people.
I call it therapeutic theater when people ask me to describe what Ritual for Return is, because it truly is. It's therapeutic in a theatrical way. And the 12 weeks, you over the 12-week period, you really have to dig deep inside of you. You have to come to terms with some truths and some facts about yourself. And that's hard for anybody to do, you know, in any situation or any circumstances. But it's even harder to do when you attach those truths to criminal acts that you've participated in. It's a whole another step in itself, you know. So through 12 weeks, you spend 3 hours with Kevin once a week, but you spend the rest of the time with yourself. You know what I'm saying? In thought about what you're partaking and participating in, and how is this going to help catapult your life into a healthier way of thinking about yourself and society and things like that. And so it was really great for me. It really was, you know. I talked to Kevin on the phone, I think, for about 2 hours that day, and I really poured my soul into him, and he asked me to write a poem, a spoken word piece. And when I got off the phone with him, from the conversation that I had with him, my pen just flowed. You know, I was able to really dig inside of me and pull some things out that I really had, like Tayana talked about earlier, I thought I had dealt with, but I really didn't. You know, and then I was able to look at it and say that and see that these emotions still had some type of control in my life that I didn't want it to have. And so I had to let it go. And I still struggle with it today. I still struggle with a lot of these emotions today. Trauma is so deep rooted and embedded in you. And it's hard to let trauma go. And because you hold on to it, it dictates your life in the most unexpected way, which makes you make choices that are not so good for you that lead you down this path of destruction. So partaking and participate in ritual for return, it allowed me to see that, one, I'm human. Two, that I can forgive myself. Three, I can let go of some guilt and some shame about some things that I've done in my past. Mm-hmm. So ritual for return, I'm always going to be grateful to Kevin. Always.
Thank you for sharing that powerful part of your story. And it is so clear that this is a process, right? It's, yes, you have this event, this graduation, you go through 13 weeks, but it seems like that is just the beginning, right? That's the launching pad, right? Of doing the lifelong work, you know, that we all need to do, especially for those of us who are just as impacted. Thank you so much. I'm just blown away by today's conversation. And thank you, Kevin and Tiana and Baina, for sharing your incredible stories of transformation and helping our audience understand sort of the challenges, but also the possibilities of returning citizens, right, who are coming home, and your amazing ritual for return journey. If you'd like to see a live performance of Ritual for Return by today's guests, please come to our annual Abolition Night. This year's performance is on Friday night, October 4th, 2024 in Portland, Maine. You can register for free tickets on Eventbrite/Beyond the Bars Maine. Free registration is also available on the same site for Beyond the Bars Maine Transformation Through Innovation Conference on October 5th, 2024 at the Rue Institute of Northwestern University in Portland, Maine. And now back to our episode. So listeners, we have some exciting shows coming up on Justice Radio. We're going to explore criminal legal issues and processes in Maine, like what's it like to be arrested, arraigned, or go through the court system? What does it mean to plea bargain or go to trial? And how do the sentencing laws in Maine impact the people's lives? And we'll cover so much more. So please visit Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.